Okay. We're welcoming Denise online. Most of you know the reason she's online this morning, but is it official? We can say it's a little, yes, sure. Ryan and Denise have a baby on the way. And, you know, she's having one of those, you know, mornings, you know, about 8 or 9 weeks in. Yes, you were there. The Poblites were there. Yeah, sorry about that, that we missed a few of you. But who's that? Oh, that's Ryan. That's Ryan. Okay, good. And we don't have any pictures from our Friday night prayer time and game night. That was really encouraging. Yes. So the lesson this morning is from the Psalms, of course. We did skip 2 weeks from our series because we had a guest preacher who's, by the way, still considering coming here. We're trying to make that decision here, Malcolm. And then we had Michael preaching. Was that last Sunday?
Ryan
preaching. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And then we had the Easter, so 3 weeks we skipped. All right. So we're back to the Psalms. And again, I want to suggest a source book for understanding the Psalms. Oh, by the way, today we're going to talk about emotions. All right. We're going to be studying from the Psalms, which are wisdom literature. The principal, but not the only purpose of reading Psalms is to help us in our relationship with God, to have a closer, more intimate, more connected relationship with God. And of course, that involves emotions. In Psalms, we learn how to feel about ourselves and how to feel about others, but most importantly, how to feel about God and to a lesser extent, how God feels about us, because in the emotion, in the Psalms, generally it's us speaking to God rather than most of the rest of the Bible where it's God speaking to us. All right, so the Psalms are poetry, but they're also songs. And one of the jobs that Zane has is to do songs that are from the Psalms, but it had been 3 weeks in a row, so he has a pretty good reason for not remembering that. So we're going to sing a song from the Psalms anyway. So you're going to turn to Psalm 95, all right, because we're going to just make a habit. We sang at least 2 songs from the Psalms on Friday night, which was great. So we're going to sing Psalm 95 together. Okay, we know this one because we've sung it once before. Well, hey, we could do that. We could do that, sure. It's a very simple, very short song. We sing it twice. Here we go. Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before Him with thanksgiving and extol Him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In His hands are the depths of the earth. The mountaintops belong to Him, the sea is His, He made it. And His hands formed the dry land. So come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before Him with thanksgiving and extol Him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In His hands are the depths of the earth. The mountaintops belong to Him, the sea is His, He made it. And His hands formed the dry land. All right, so that's good practice. The Psalms are, in fact, songs, because the word psalm means songs. Now, there are a number of different types of psalms. There's the book that I want to suggest that from the Psalms. Got about 4 or 5 copies back there. 8 of you said you wanted to buy a copy, so went out and spent the money. So at least 4 or 5 of you need to pony up. Either that or I guess I'll have to swallow the cost, which it's all right. It's all right. I can handle that. All right, so anyway, actually, I'm not trying to bully you into using it. This is a great resource. In fact, I'm reading it for the second time. I wrote an email to Roland telling him how amazing it is, how proud I am that he wrote that amazing book on the Psalms. All right, so we looked at the different kinds of Psalms. Think about Psalm 95 as I go through this list and ask yourself which kind of Psalm 95 is. Okay, we saw Psalms of Lament. And 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, whenever it was, we did Psalm 42, which is a Psalm of Lament, which are Psalms basically a crying out to God in times of suffering, in times of turmoil, in times of struggle. The psalmist is feeling fear or loss or sorrow. And these are helpful, especially in our quiet times. Next is imprecatory psalms. That's a big fancy word. Basically, these are psalms in which the psalmist is saying, God, get those people and take them out. All right. By the way, the ones in red are ones we're going to do sermons from. And I'm going to kind of skip the imprecatory. So I just can't see doing a sermon about judge those people and take them out. But it does legitimize on some level that we have those feelings because God will judge his enemies. All right, so think about that. The theology of those psalms is interesting. And we have psalms of praise. All right, and we're going to do a sermon from Psalm 19 in a week or two. Psalms of confession, where basically we're just saying, God, we're sinners, here's how we sinned, and please forgive us, that kind of stuff. We're going to do a sermon from Psalm 51. Historical psalms, which recount the works of God. These are different from the other psalms in that they're not emotional necessarily. They're more informational. Then we have wisdom psalms that seem a little bit like proverbs, where we're essentially receiving advice about how to live. And then there are the royal psalms, which are messianic in nature, about the kingly Messiah. All right, Psalm 95, which is it? Come, yeah, it's a psalm of praise. Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud. All right, which are there the most of?
Three.
Psalms of lament. All right. In fact, it's a fairly good majority, not a majority, a fairly large plurality of the psalms are psalms of lament. Okay, so that's worth noting. Anyway, like I said, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we did a Psalm 42. Remember it says, as a deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. And the psalmist, it was the sons of Korah, right? They said their soul was downcast. They'd lost their way. They'd been distracted by the world. And they got to the point where they said to God, why have you forgotten me? And we asked, is God angry at the sons of Korah for expressing that idea, that emotion? The answer is almost certainly not. But then he remembered how he used to go into the house of God with shouts of joy. Because the pattern is a complaint, a petition, a statement of faith in God, and a vow to praise and thank God. That's the pattern in the Psalms of Lament. All right, so this morning we're going to talk about emotions. In fact, one title of this sermon is the Psalms of Asaph. Another title is God's Emotions, Our Emotions. All right, so we're going to talk about emotions. All right? And it's not exactly a complete, utter secret that knowing and expressing and understanding emotions is not exactly my specialty. It's kind of like the Pope giving a sermon about marriage advice, you know? It's kind of like that. By the way, Pope John Paul II wrote a very famous book of advice on marriage, which is kind of ironic. And it's pretty popular. I don't know where he got his information from, but, oh, that's right. Oh, never mind. I'm going to go there. Where he got his information from, ex cathedra. All right. Anyway. So, you know, I'm not somebody who tends to be as in touch with my emotions as a lot of you are. And my father's German and he's very, very German. I never saw him cry in my entire life, not even once, rarely showed affection. It's not that he didn't love us, he just didn't know how to express it. And even my mother is very British, stiff upper lip and all that. And when my dad died, I think I mentioned this, she didn't cry. You could tell these emotions were just boiling up in her, but she just didn't know how to express them or release them. All right? But God is very emotional. And, you know, when we think about this, you know, we, Josh read that passage from Psalm 8, that his finger, by his finger, created the universe. The same creator of the entire universe who created all of physics and all this stuff has emotions. You know, that's hard to kind of put those two together. That the creator, who is so rational, so logical, so intelligent, also has deep emotions, but God does. Now, I'm going to look at a number of scriptures that describe some of the emotions God has. We're not going to turn to those passages because it'll take too long. I'm just basically going to read them off my, you know, notes here. But trust me, I am actually quoting from the actual Bible. For example, in Genesis 1:25, it says, God saw that it was good. It was very good. One of the emotions God has is a sense of satisfaction. This feeling that it was worth it. This feeling of accomplishment. God here is content. God here is delighted with what he has made. And he's delighted with us. But then, just five chapters later, Genesis 6, verse 6, it says, the Lord regretted. By the way, I'm kind of highlighting the emotions here. All right, men, we just have three emotions, happy, angry, and sad. Those are the only ones we have. But women have, it's just like colors, you know, they recognize all these different emotions. I'm kidding, but it's partially true. God saw that it was good. I'm sorry. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. This creation that he was so proud of. Now he's like, man, what did I do? What was I thinking? How hard it is to watch them rebel and destroy their life. Another emotion God has, Exodus 20, verse 5, which is a little surprising. It says, I, the Lord, am a jealous God. Punishing. God feels a sense of desire to take revenge. Punishing the children for the sin of their parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Yeah, God feels jealousy. He doesn't feel envy. Envy is a desire for what somebody else has. But he does feel jealousy, which is not wanting somebody else to have what by right is his. And yes, if you go after other gods, God is very jealous. And God has those, in quotes, negative emotions, and he has those positive emotions, both. All right, for example, we could see in Isaiah 49:15, God says to us through Isaiah, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? And the answer is no, she cannot. That is not possible. God says, though she might forget, I will never forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hand. Compassion. Love. God feels that. But he also feels anger. Jeremiah 30, verse 24 says, the fierce anger of the Lord will not turn back until he fully accomplishes the purpose of his heart. When we rebel and sin against him, it produces anger. And if you've ever been a parent, and we have four parents in here, if you've ever been five parents, excuse me, Tiani, yeah, you know what it's like to feel anger. I don't care what you say, all right? Yeah, parents feel anger, trust me. All right, because, and God is like that in that way. And then there's Jeremiah 31:3, where it says, I've loved you with an everlasting love. I've drawn you with unfailing kindness. Yeah, God feels love. And we could argue this is the most predominant of his emotions. I think we could make that argument. Love isn't just an emotion, of course. It's a decision. But for God, it is also an emotion. Then there's Hosea 11. That's the only one we're going to actually read or turn to, if anyway. Hosea 11. One of my favorite passages where God's expressing his emotions. Hosea 11. I'm going to read verse 1 and then I'm going to skip down to verse 8. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt, I called my son. You know, God saw his children in slavery and he said, I can't accept it. I can't abide it. So I need to send a savior to bring them out of slavery. And he did. Then in verse 8, however, having called them out of Egypt in the desert, they rebelled against him and they didn't honor him. And they wanted to go back to slavery. In verse 8, how can I give you up, Ephraim? He's using very poetic language. By Ephraim, that's kind of an indirect way to say Israel or my people. How can I hand you over, Israel? How can I treat you like Admah? How can I make you like Zeboiim? And by the way, it's Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboiim. So it's a poetic way of saying, how can I treat you like I treated Sodom and Gomorrah? And yet that's what your sin is causing me to feel that I need to do. He says, my heart is changed within me. All my compassion is aroused. I will not carry out my fierce anger, nor will I devastate Ephraim again. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One among you. I will not come against their cities. So God feels a range of emotions. Loyalty. He feels a kind of loyalty. The word hesed, I've used that word a number of times. But guess who else felt a lot of emotions? Jesus. In Mark 3:5, when he saw the legalism of the Pharisees, who were more concerned about their law than the fact that somebody had been healed, he looked at them in anger and he was deeply distressed. Has God ever felt anger and deep distress towards you? Probably. At their stubborn hearts, he said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he healed him anyway. The other hand, in Luke 10:21, it says, at that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, because what had happened is he sent the 72 out to preach and to teach and to evangelize, and they came back fired up because they were successful. And Jesus was so proud of them, it filled him with joy. Have you ever made God feel joy? I hope so. And then probably the most famous emotional passage of Jesus would be Matthew 26, 37 through 38, which most of us, in fact, I would imagine maybe all of us have read, where it says, Jesus began to be sorrowful and troubled. And he said, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. So Jesus feels all of these feelings. Well, guess what? So do we. There are a couple of emotions that God doesn't ever feel. He doesn't ever feel shame. He doesn't ever feel envy. But I'd say almost all the emotions we feel, God feels. Ryan's sitting there, is that true? He doesn't ever... Well, talk to me later. Maybe you'll decide that he does, but I think God does not. I think that's a totally negative and useless emotion, as is envy. But and if I'm wrong, that's okay. So actually, back in Bakersfield, when we were there, we had the entire church do a whole series on spirituality, which included having a healthy understanding of our emotions and our feelings and stuff like that. And so a couple of quotes from this person who actually knows about emotions, unlike me. He said, ignoring our emotions, hey Noe, ignoring our emotions is turning our back on reality. Listening to our emotions ushers us into reality. Emotions are the language of the soul. All right, so if you won't let your emotions be expressed, both negative and positive, you don't come out and understand yourself, and you can't really have the kind of relationship with God or with one another that you want to have. But wait a minute. When I was a young Christian, I was taught Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Who can understand it? So he said, you can't trust your emotions. I didn't say we should trust our emotions. I didn't say that. I said we should feel them and acknowledge them and let them do what they're intended to do. Now, we don't trust our emotions. Well, maybe on some level, certain emotions tell us something's going on, so maybe. But no, we don't trust our emotions to decide what's true. We don't do that. All right? We can't trust our feelings to tell us the essential truths about God. I feel that God ought to do such and such. Okay, I'm glad you're feeling that. Just so you know, that doesn't mean it's true. All right? I feel that God is telling me. I hear people saying that all the time. Oh, maybe. All right? So we don't want to be controlled by our emotions, but we do want to experience them because they are a gift from God. How about instead, God is telling me, say, this is what I'm feeling. I just feel like that. And leave it at that. So another quote from that book, the author Peter Scazzaro said, I believe the greatest gift we can give the world is our true self living in loving union with God. How can we affirm other people's unique identities when we do not affirm our own? So, now, where in the Bible, this is going to be, if you fail this quiz, then it's kind of depressing. Where in the Bible could we go to learn about somebody who was really good at expressing and feeling his emotions?
Psalms.
Thank you, Jan, for getting that one right. I'm sure everybody was going to say that, right? You say, no, 1 Corinthians, there's lots of emotions there. Okay, I guess. All right, so now we're finally actually getting to our sermon, which is Psalm 73 and 74, and these are both psalms of lament written by this person, Asaph. And by the way, it's possible Asaph may be a representative of a group of songwriters, or it might be a single individual. There is a single individual named Asaph who was David's chief musician. And he was trained by a pretty awesome musician whose name was David. And he was trained by a pretty great poet whose name was David. It's a psalm of lament. So let's read verses 1 through 12 of Psalm 73. Psalm 73. So we're going to feel some emotions this morning. We're going to feel them with somebody else. You know, we were at I was at the viewing for Noe's grandfather and at the mass. And I didn't know these people from Adam, you know, other than I think I'd met Noe's mother one time. But when they would start to kind of, you know, cry out, it's like, why am I feeling this stuff? I never met this guy who died, and it's not Noe who's having that, so why am I feeling that? Because God made us that way. That's just the way we are. So, verse 1 through 12. So Asaph's having one of those days, you know? It says, surely God is good to Israel for those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For they have no struggles. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They are free from common human burdens, and they're not plagued by human ills. Therefore, their pride is their necklace. They clothe themselves with violence. From their callous hearts comes iniquity. Their evil imaginations have no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. With arrogance, they threaten oppression. Their mouths lay claim to heaven. Their tongues take possession of the earth. Therefore, their people turn to them. They drink up waters in abundance, and they say, how would God know? Does the Most High know anything? This is what the wicked are like, always free of care. They go on amassing wealth. All right, so again, like I said, Asaph's feeling some stuff. Now, in verse 1, he says, surely God is good to Israel and to those who are pure in heart. And they say, now, that's what I know to be true intellectually, but guess what? That ain't what I'm feeling right now. It happens to us. We know the truth, but we don't feel that way. Michael and I, we have quite a few of these conversations. I'm glad that Michael's open about his feelings, because if he wasn't, oh my goodness, he would go in some pretty dark places. But in verse 3 and 4, he says, but I envied the arrogant. He was feeling envy. That's one of those emotions that I claim God doesn't even actually have. I might be wrong, but I envied the arrogant. He saw the prideful sinners having a really great time. They're at their parties and they're having a great time. They're going skiing and they're, you know, surfing and they're just having a great time. You know, I'm in church and I'm praying till 11 o'clock at night and, you know. And then verse 4 and 5 says, they have no struggles. That's a total lie. You know what? For a brief moment, he's actually believing it. He's feeling that. He's looking at his neighbors and saying, man, everything's great for them, and they're not even Christians. Their bodies are healthy and strong. They're free from common human burdens. A total lie, but you know what? That's what he's feeling. That's what he's feeling. He's feeling anger towards the wicked, right? From their callous hearts comes iniquity and evil imaginations. They have no limits. They scoff and speak with malice. He is ticked off at them. He's feeling, because of their callous hearts, their evil imaginations, their arrogance, their malice. And despite being blatant, prideful, arrogant sinners, they have the nerve to say that, let me see, their mouths lay claim to heaven. We're spiritual. I mean, we're Christians. Oh yeah, we're going to heaven. We believe in God. Despite the fact that their lives are completely opposite. And man, Asaph is ticked off. It's just, man. And verse 10, and they're even popular. All right, especially young people feel this. Oh man, I sure wish I was in that popular group. Oh man, those popular people, everybody's, you know, everybody loves them, and, you know, they're on the cheerleading squad, and they're, you know, they're captain of the basketball team, and man, I'm telling you, we feel that kind of stuff. You know what? Asaph is human. And he's feeling every emotion he had right here, all of you have had, and probably all of you have had every one of these emotions, certainly within the last month at one time or another. Right? So God is really, really angry at Asaph for having these feelings. No, I don't think so. But it gets worse. Oh, it gets even worse. Verse 13 and 14. He says, surely in vain I have kept my heart pure, and I have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I've been afflicted, and every morning brings me new punishments. I've been so devoted to you, God. I've been so committed. And what have you done for me lately, God? You know, I've been praying for you to give me a girlfriend, and you haven't even done it yet. You know, I've been sharing my faith consistently, and nobody ever even comes. In fact, they just laugh at me. Asaph is feeling regret for his service to God. He's feeling that. He's feeling disappointment, like God has not even been faithful to him. He's probably feeling depressed, and he's feeling a loss of hope. All of those are feelings that we will have, and I think we need to be able to acknowledge that, recognize it, and not feel shame over that. He's feeling it wasn't worth it. He's feeling every morning brings new punishments. Says, God hasn't blessed me the way he promised. I still don't have the job I wanted, the health I expected, or the boyfriend I'd been planning on. Can you relate to any of these things? All right, now, what we're going to do next is we're going to skip Psalm 73:15 for now, because instead we're going to go to Psalm 74:1-11. So we're seeing some negative emotions here. All right. And feeling these emotions, having these emotions is not a problem. Dwelling on them, staying there, taking them where they're trying to take you, those are not good things. So we're going to look at the positive end of this lament in a minute, but instead I'm going to go to Psalm 74, verse 1 through 11. Another psalm of lament. Oh God, why have you rejected us forever? Why does your anger smolder against the sheep of your pasture? Remember the nation who you purchased long ago, the people of your inheritance whom you redeemed. Mount Zion, where you dwelt. Turn your steps towards these everlasting ruins. All this destruction the enemy has brought on the sanctuary. Your foes roared in the place where you met with us. They set up their standards as signs. They behaved like men wielding axes to cut through the thicket of trees. They smashed all the carved paneling. He's talking about the destruction of the temple, which had actually happened. All right. They burned your sanctuary to the ground. They defiled the dwelling place of your name. They said in their hearts, we will crush them completely. They burned every place where God was worshipped in the land. We are given no signs from God. No prophets are left, and none of us knows how long this will be. How long will the enemy mock you, God? Will the foe revile your name forever? Why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the folds of your garment and destroy them. Wow. Again, different psalm, maybe even a different situation. In fact, possibly even a different author, just so you know, it's possible. Ahab is feeling sadness. He's feeling rejection corporately as a people and individually. He said, God has rejected us. He's no longer blessing our church. We haven't had baptisms for over a year. Several have even left God. Our contribution has gone down. We might even have to fire our leaders. Oh my goodness, God, what did we do wrong? Why are you doing this to us? Now, he is exaggerating, right? I mean, you don't know that for a fact, but if you know what actually went on, he's exaggerating. He said, God, why have you rejected us forever? Okay, he's kind of over the top here. But we have those feelings. We have those depressions. He says, in the past, we were a special chosen people, but now the city lies in ruins. You had blessed our church. Now we're just, everybody says, what's wrong with those people? And we're feeling like everybody's looking at us and we're embarrassed. God has abandoned his people. And Asaph is feeling fear as well and a sense of loss. They've gone after our young disciples to destroy their faith. They've kicked us, our campus ministry, off campus. He's feeling abandoned. The excitement of his Christianity is just, it's not there. It's evaporated. And then in verse 11, he says, God, you just got your hands in your pockets. Essentially, right? He says, take from the folds of your garment. Yeah, why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the fold. He said, God, you're just sitting there with your hands in your pockets, just watching, doing nothing. That's what he's feeling like. Is that true? No. Is that what he's feeling? Yes. Okay. Now let's turn it around. All right. Let's go back to Psalm 73, verse 15. But Asaph has a sense of suffering and anguish. You know, is God angry at Asaph for having these feelings? That's about my fifth time for asking that rhetorical question. The answer is, I don't think so. Because God allowed him to feel these things. In fact, he made him in order to be able to feel these things. Because God feels most of these things at one time or another as well. Because without suffering and anguish, there's no joy. Without a sense of loss, there's no sense of accomplishment. Without loneliness, there's no sense of affection. And if we suppress these emotions, we won't be able to feel the positive emotions on some level. And so these negative emotions lead to awesome, amazing emotions. But God wanted them and us to feel both of those things. All right? So we go back to Psalm 73, verse 15 through 28. It says here, If I had spoken out like that, I would have betrayed your children. All right, so he felt those emotions, but at some point, he had to kind of turn it around, didn't he? When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply. Till I entered the sanctuary of God, then I understood their final destiny. Surely you placed them on slippery ground. You cast them down to ruin. How suddenly they are destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. They're like a dream when one awakens. When you arise, Lord, you will despise them as fantasies. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Yet I'm always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterward, you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing to desire beside you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all who are unfaithful to you. But as for me, it is good to be near God. I've made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds. So Asaph said, I felt a lot of stuff. I acknowledged my feelings to myself and to you, God, but I didn't let them take me too far into a dark place. So instead, what did Asaph do? He brought his feelings before God. Right? Says, then I came into your sanctuary. In fact, verse 16 and 17, that'd be kind of a good memory verse, wouldn't it? Said, when I tried to understand all things, it troubled me deeply until I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. I reignited the spiritual disciplines in my life. I started praying regularly. I meditated on the scriptures. In fact, I memorized scriptures. I prayed. I practiced Sabbath and those other spiritual disciplines with the big fancy words like Lectio Divina and all that stuff. All that stuff you read about, all spiritual discipline stuff. Even in that book by Scazzaro, he talks about that stuff. Verse 18 through 20, I was brought back to my senses. I remembered the truth, which is, yeah, sometimes the wicked have awesome stuff. In fact, even I, when I was wicked, even I had a lot of fun sometimes. But he said, the ultimate result for them is destruction. Sure, he remembered the truth about the situation and the big picture, what's going to happen. And he realized, yeah, I was feeling that God had abandoned me, but the fact is, God never abandons us. He's God. He is faithful. And I remembered the Bible stories. And they informed me. He said, I felt grieved, but don't let your grief turn you to bitterness. Don't let that happen. Don't let that happen. He says in verse 22, basically he says, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. I mean, yeah, I was in a bad place, but I repented. Despite this, you, God, are always with me. So now Asaph is feeling a sense of safety, a sense of protection. Verse 24, you guide me with your counsel, and afterward you will take me into glory. My future is assured. My future is known. There's no doubt. He's feeling safe. He's feeling protected. He's feeling a renewed desire for God. He's feeling confident. He says in verse 26, God is my portion. And then in verse 27, he says, those who are far from you will perish. He says, I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to get back into action and doing the things that always you wanted me to do. In verse 28, Asaph is feeling pretty awesome. He's going to go out and start sharing his faith because he's proud to have a relationship with God. And then let's read how it ended up in Psalm 74. Sorry, I'm making you. All right. It was a late night last night, right? That's the problem sitting in the front row, you know. All right. Verse 12. And again, this is after Asaph was feeling like, God, you have abandoned your people. He's feeling like, I'm all alone. I don't know if you ever felt stuff like that. even as a Christian. You did? I thought you had faith in God. You should never have those emotions. Well, Asaph did. And he's like, this is a positive example, right? This is a positive example. Okay. So it's okay to feel that stuff. It's okay to acknowledge it to yourself, acknowledge it to God. And by the way, if somebody acknowledges that to you, don't say, oh, why do you have that feeling? What's wrong with you? Don't you have any faith? Folks, come on. We need to be a safe place around here. Yes. That people can express these things and not be accused of whatever. Okay? But God is my king from long ago. He brings salvation on the earth. It was you who split open the sea by your power. You broke the heads of monsters in the waters. It was you who crushed the head of Leviathan and gave it food, it as food to the creature of the desert. It was you who opened up the springs and streams. You dried up the river, ever flowing rivers. The day is yours and yours also the night. You established the sun and the moon. It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter. Remember how your enemy has mocked you, Lord, how foolish people have reviled your name. Do not hand over the life of your dove to wild beasts. Do not forget the lives of your afflicted people forever. So basically, Asaph went out and had a quiet time. And he read the awesome deeds of God. And he became confident. He's feeling safe now. In fact, he's beyond safe. He's starting to feel bold. All right, let's read on a little bit more here. Let's see. Have regard for your covenant because haunts of violence fill the places of the land. Do not let the oppressed retreat in disgrace. May the poor and needy praise your name. Rise up, O God, defend your cause. Remember how fools mock you all day long. Do not ignore the clamor of your adversaries, the uproar of your enemies, which rises continually. You know, all of us want to feel joy, satisfaction, contentment, safety. But the alternative feelings are real as well. And God wants us to experience a true, full life. Let's finish in Psalm 139. Let's finish in Psalm 139. I'll read 23 and 24. Here's David. I believe it's David. Yes. Search me, O God, know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. David was open with God. And he wanted God to know what was really going on in the inmost places, as if God didn't already know those things. And so, to summarize, you know, we are spiritual beings, but we're also emotional beings. And guess what? God is that too. He's spiritual and he's emotional. And I believe both our positive and our, in quotes, negative emotions, if we handle them properly in under a Christian worldview, God can and will help us to know ourselves and to deepen our relationship with God. So that's what the sermon was about this morning. And we'll have a song now. And the Lord's Supper by Ken. There you go. For those tears I died.